Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes it feels counterintuitive, like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and it's great to have you with me today. It's that time of year when a lot of us overindulge, eat too much, drink too much. Even if we don't want to, the pressure tends to be on, so it can be hard not to succumb to family or peer pressure. Alcohol consumption particularly can be a problem. How can we drink responsibly, healthily, and still have a good time? While celebrations don't have to be drink-fueled, a recent survey by the Gilchrist Collection Wedding Venue Group found that patterns there are shifting, and a quarter of we Britons are choosing to go alcohol-free at weddings. They also found that just over a third of the 2,000 adults in the survey felt uncomfortable when they were asked about not drinking, and around half of those sober guests were only offered water as an alternative to alcohol. Now, I personally don't mind that so much because water and tea are my go-to drinks, but I did enjoy a very tasty mocktail, that's an alcohol-free cocktail, of course, at a Christmas party the other evening. Just the one, because delicious as it was, more than that would have been too much for me. The trick is to know what you want, set your boundaries and stick to your guns, something my guest today knows all about. Dr. Joe Perkins is a chartered psychologist who helps people to drink mindfully, which helps take the stress out of festive fun. Talking of stress, remember that a great way to de-stress is to book an energy session with me. Check out my website, safehavenhealing.uk, to find out more and book an initial consultation. But first, have a listen to my interview with Dr. Perkins for some great tips on how to enjoy the party season without so much stress or drinking to excess. Oh, it's so good to have you on the show, and especially at this time, we're going out just before Christmas. And of course, Christmas in a lot of the Western world and a lot of the East as well is a very important time, but we do tend to overdo things, and it tends to throw up so many issues for a lot of us, not the least the drinking, the alcohol consumption. Yeah. And then you talk about mindful drinking. Tell us what that is.
Well, JJ, it can mean different things to different people, but it is very much about we are so often on autopilot, playing out habits and doing things without really consciously being aware or thinking about what we're doing across all aspects of our lives. And drinking really falls into that category. We find ourselves in a situation, and even before we're in that situation, whether it's going to a party, accepting the invite to go, we already have sown the seed of what we're going to be drinking and doing without even knowing we've done it. We've got an imprint in our minds of what that entails. And being mindful is about, as an example, on the invite thing, thinking, okay, what am I accepting? What am I opting into, firstly? And being aware of what that throws up for you in terms of emotions. Is there anticipation, excitement, any edge of anxiety? What is that? And it's not judging those thoughts or feelings that we might be having, but tuning into them, noting them. And that's data. What does it tell us? And particularly when it comes to drinking, what does it tell us about drinking? I mean, I know that I've, for example, had clients that go, when they really start paying attention, they realize that saying yes to particular events will have very clear hallmarks, psychologically speaking, around the drinking. So that will be a very exciting thing because they know they can get absolutely on it from a particular time of day. It's all wrapped up in that event and therefore is okay to be drinking at 11 or 12. Some people will have real dread. They'll go, do you know what? Actually, now I think about it, I want to see those people. but actually I don't really want to be there for the duration of that event. So when we get mindful about our drinking, we can start to wrap different actions and intentions around it through that understanding. So that for me is being mindful. And also kind of being aware of how we want to drink. So there's what events and certain friendships and situations can throw up for us, and being mindful about that. But what's our relationship with alcohol? Just us with it, and being aware of what role it plays in our lives. Is that different across different situations? Do we go to it more in particular scenarios, or when we're going through certain things as a coping strategy? Or are there times when we naturally drink less, and why? Just being curious about that, again, without judgment, without criticizing ourselves or putting expectations. But once we start that awareness, we can then design our lives more healthily and intentionally for ourselves.
Yes, I really like what you're saying there. And, you know, looking back on my life, I don't drink anymore, because when I was going through menopause, I had to stop. It was just doing my body no favors whatsoever. Terrible migraines. And so, but I'm thinking back to when I did used to drink, and I, you know, as a journalist, we used to drink a lot. I mean, a lot. You know, you'd go out for lunch, you'd have a drink, you'd go out after work and have a drink. But I'm just thinking back, and you know, for a long, long time, if I was living on my own, I never used to really keep alcohol in the house, because I would be very conscious of not wanting to drink on my own. That didn't seem like a thing to me. So I wouldn't keep wine or spirits in the house. If I was drinking, it would always be in company. Either, you know, I'd get something because I was having people around for a meal, or I'd be going out. And that's the kind of thing that you're talking about paying attention to, isn't it? So when do you drink, and how and where?
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, there was obviously a clear boundary for you, whether you'd been intentional or not. It sounds like you certainly were at some point intentional, but that you didn't do that at home, unless you're in the company of others. And there aren't any right or wrong rules particularly. It's more about being aware of what rules we've come to have in place and whether they're serving us at this point in our lives. And that's where the judgment is, you know, important to keep out of it. Don't worry about what anyone else is saying. Where are you at right now? What's working for you? And just becoming aware of those rules and expectations we have of ourselves and others have of us is really important if we're wanting to be mindful about our drinking.
Yes, because there are huge social pressures even today. I mean, things have changed a lot since when I was growing up. Yeah. But today, even still, there are social pressures. It's becoming more acceptable to not have alcohol. But, you know, sometimes you just don't want, you know, the substitutes, the, you know, the low alcohols, the this, that and the other. And of course, you know, you've got laws like in Scotland, there's a zero tolerance of drinking and driving. So, you know, you can't even have one legally when you go out. Yeah. So it's really a question of, I guess, of setting your boundaries, knowing exactly what you want and setting those boundaries and actually being very clear about that. And not really caring what anybody else thinks, but thinking I'm looking after myself.
Yeah, and I think you've mentioned a few really key things in there that I'm sure the listeners will absolutely recognise. It's that social pressure and expectation, and then being aware of the boundaries. But also, we need to be, from a psychological perspective, what sets us up to succeed, sort of quote unquote, in our mindful drinking is being very clear with ourselves, or trying to get as clear as we possibly can. Certainly if we're earlier on in our mindful drinking journey and it's quite a new thing that we're trying, what is it that you're trying to achieve? And sometimes people jump on things because they feel like they should, or because they've read about it and there's nothing wrong with that. But then it become very frustrating when we fail miserably and go to that party having said, I'm going to mindfully drink, but we didn't have the plan in place. We weren't really sure why we were mindfully drinking, because we hadn't been exploring that. And what I see in practice, and I also know from personal experience, is if we know what we're trying to achieve with being mindful, whether that's our health, wanting to avoid a hangover, save money, being very careful about how we might behave when we've had a drink. Sometimes, you know, some people really struggle to keep on track. We all have different reactions to it. So sometimes it's a combination of all of those. But if we know why we want to make a change and stay true to that and really hold it close to us as we're going out ahead of that event evening, it becomes much easier to stick to our plan.
Yes. And you mentioned saving money. And of course, one of the big things in the UK is the rounds culture. When you go out for a drink and maybe it's the office Christmas drink and everybody's buying rounds, how do you deal with that? Because that can be really bad, you know, really expensive.
It can. And I think that, again, you know, whether you're trying to save money or not, if you are the one drinking a soft drink or non-alcoholic drink of some variety of tea, coffee, sometimes they can almost be as much
true
from a money perspective as the alcoholic drinks, because you almost get penalized for being sober. But chances are you don't want to keep up with the drinkers. So I think that it's really more than acceptable to just say, look, don't think I'm being rude, but I'm going to opt out of this one because I don't know how long I'll be staying. And actually, I'm just going to have a soft drink. So thanks, but I'll sort myself out. And providing you put the context in place, that should, in theory, put the conversation to rest. If someone's very insistent that they get you one, join in, but you've already set your stall out that you then don't need to buy the round. And I'd say don't feel obliged internally within yourself to do that. But I think that saying you may not be here to stand your round later on, or that you're drinking a soft drink, I think is really important to just be able to say that very clearly up front. And I think most people get it.
Yeah, I think most people do. However, having been in that situation many times, I have experienced that moment where you just think, oh, well, you know, they're insisting that they buy me a drink, even though it's a soft drink. And now I do feel obliged to get into this rounds culture. But yeah, I think, again, it's a question of being clear, isn't it, when you're delivering that message to the group that you're with and sticking to that.
Yeah. And I think that this goes to the point that I think is really important, JJ, when we are being mindfully drinking, and we're going to be out. Sometimes you're at someone's house, then you don't have those bits to navigate.
Yeah, exactly.
Social, verbal sort of communicational pressures. But when we're out, we need the script. Mm-hmm. Until we're really confident and sure of where we're at with our drinking and our intentions for that night, we do need a script. And I would say to any of my clients, have the script ready, whether that is, do you know what? I'm just going to get myself because I'm not sure how long I'm going to be staying, or I'm drinking a soft drink, so I'm going to opt out because I don't really feel like I can join in the rounds. And having that ready means that we don't get flustered. Also, you've done a bit of pre-prep on that internal obligation. You kind of go, do you know, I can only be open and honest. If people then still insist on buying me drinks, I've already said that I'm not going to be buying it. And then that's the battle that you prepare yourself for, not keeping on. But it's the clear communication at the outset. And that's what we need to have ready, because it can get forgotten and we're caught up in the sea of the pressure before we know, and then feeling really resentful, maybe a bit nervous about what the bill's going to be when we get caught for the 10 person round and your mineral waters cost you £70 because people are later on in the night. That is something we have to put boundaries in to keep ourselves safe financially, emotionally and psychologically, and we don't have to be involved in those big rounds. So, but having the script before you go is part of the plan.
Yeah, no, that's a great tip. So a bit of preparation
before you go. Yeah.
And
you can have a buddy as well. If it's a work do or a social, sometime there might be someone else drinking a soft drink because they're driving or being mindful or for health reasons, and you two can buddy up and just say, look, do we want to go in together? So you can form almost a healthy splinter group, but openly, and say, we'll do it over here. You stay buying the wine and beer. And that can feel like a nice way to do it, because you may not be the only person.
Yes, and we're not just talking about Christmas, which is at the time of recording this coming up, but also New Year, which is a huge thing in many places in the world. particularly where I am in Scotland, and it's very much the same thing. And, you know, of course, with New Year, if anybody is a traditionalist in Scotland, you go first footing, which is a custom where you take a bottle of alcohol and maybe a lump of coal and maybe something to eat, and you go around, and the first dark-haired gentleman to cross your threshold with some coal bring you good luck. But it is that it's that really ingrained, entrenched culture of having a drink. And of course, if you're staying off it completely, it's very difficult to step away from that. I can see people around Scotland particularly thinking, well, how do you do that when you can't even, and also you can't even drink and you can't drive and drink. So it's kind of a bit of a killer in terms of tradition, but it's just having to get used to that being the case and being quite strong about it and saying, well, I'm not going to do that. I'll find some kind of alternative.
Well, yeah. And that's a great example of these more entrenched traditions, and they can happen at any time of the year. They can happen in, you know, families and social situations and society. But I think that it's two key things. There's one, having the script and the plan to say, I'm going to do it differently this year. And if you feel confident to do that, then great. You may find you have some other takers, or you can bring again a soft drink with you if you don't want to miss out on that. There will be times where I'll say to clients that I'm working with that, you know what, on this occasion, if not drinking is either critical or really important to you, this might be quite early stages for you to be confident about it and think that you will be able to stick to it, or believe that you will be able to stick to it. If that's the case, give yourself permission to not go out.
Yeah.
Now, you don't necessarily, I'm not suggesting you stay in, be lonely
and be boring, and
permission to have an alternative whole evening where you're not being confronted with having to be confident and strong and having, you know, the right way of managing it, because that's not always possible.
Yeah.
It's easier as you go along once you've navigated things on a few situations. But I think it's, you know, definitely sensible to go, do you know what, this is one of the ones I'm going to have to sit out.
Yes, the pressure to be the life and soul of the party can be huge, but we really can decide to sit it out if we're just not feeling it. We'll hear more from Dr. Joe Perkins on that in a moment, but first it's time for a short commercial break. Back right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And welcome back to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and today's guest, Dr. Joe Perkins. Now, before the break, we were talking about traditions around alcohol and the social pressures they create. Here's how we continued.
Yeah, and as we were talking about traditions, I was also thinking of times when I've been abroad and in different cultures where drinking is very much a polite thing to do. So, for instance, I was in Ukraine many years ago once, and we were being hosted by a whole bunch of city dignitaries in Kiev, and the vodka was flowing, and everybody around the table and I don't know, there's at least a dozen, maybe even 20 people around the table all had to give a toast, and you were downing the vodka. Now, to refuse in that situation is bad manners. And it's very difficult to navigate that as well if you don't want to drink. But I mean, that's a whole world away from the sort of festive drinking.
Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, let's not underestimate the peer pressure can sometimes feel as if you are causing great offence by not drinking at that person's party or at that person's table or that person's event. It's almost like, you know, it's a popularity contest sometimes, you know, a contest rather.
Yeah.
You know, but surely you can drink here. This is more of the place where you do it. But it's not about anyone else. And I think it's important for us to give ourselves permission to remind ourselves of that. This isn't about anyone else. This is not about causing offense. It is not our responsibility to be the life and soul of the party, if that is deemed, you know, that alcohol is essential to. If you want me at your party or you want me to be at your table, this is how it has to be. Sometimes we need a script where it is, for health reasons, I can't, even if that's actually not your reason. You know, it depends on your situation, but sometimes that just shuts the conversation down. Oh, okay. Providing it's not that you don't want to lose here. It's whatever works for you in your situations, but definitely not falling into the trap of thinking that it is something you should do because it's expected.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, you have the scenario, which I've also faced many times, when the person who's maybe hosting a Christmas lunch, Christmas dinner, think that they're treating you by buying you a sort of a sparkling soft drink, you know, like an elderflower champagne or something like that, you know, a soft drink.
Yeah.
And I've been in the situation where I've accepted that as an alternative and ended up just so, my mouth just puckered up with the sugar content and, you know, really not enjoying it because it's not the kind of thing that I drink. So again, you know, you have to be very, really clear with people, I think, and do it in a way, though, that they're not offended. So how could you make sure that your host or hostess isn't going to be offended because they've bought you this, you know, festive non-alcoholic drink, but it's actually not what you want to drink?
There are all sorts of nuances. We've all got someone that we will never get this one right with. You know, so that's the sort of disclaimer, I suppose, that will suit all, because we know that can be the case. But I think that two kind of things. If you know that your host may have been getting these treats because that's how they like to host.
Yes.
Sometimes that can translate when we're on the receiving end of thinking, I must be the good guest, the amiable guest, and make sure that I receive openly. A lot of the time, we're not going to offend our host by saying, do you know what? Do you mind if I just have a cup of tea or a glass of tap water? And as long as you've got a smile on your face and you are in the spirit of things, that can normally ease you through that one. And you may get an insistent host going, but I've got this. You know, you can just say, no, honestly, I'm not great with that. I just really fancy that would be the best thing you could get for me. So I think being very open about what you do want and not falling into the trap of thinking you should accept what's been offered is one bit. If you are going to someone who you know is likely to accommodate very specifically for you and only you, knowing you're not drinking rather than the more general non-drinking option, give them the heads up beforehand. Just say, look, I know what a great host you are, and you're always going to cover everyone's needs. Please don't go into any extra special effort for me, because I will be happy with my cup of tea or my orange juice, or I'll bring what I want to drink if that's something that you know you particularly like a grapefruit juice. Bring it. So that's, I think, you know, a way of managing it. And being firm, if you get a very insistent host that they bought this amazing drink for you, just say, no, I'm sorry, I don't want it. Sometimes we just have to be very firm.
Wow. Yeah, I can
hopefully
see
you can be in that situation. But if you are, then have it ready in your script.
Yeah, it is all about prep, but it is about boundaries, isn't it? It's about setting these boundaries and saying, look, this is me.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm not going to bend. And knowing that that's not rude, it's not rude to have boundaries. In fact, it's almost the opposite.
Yeah. And interestingly, I'm not saying this can't happen, but we wouldn't worry about offending a generous sort of overzealous host by not taking an extra 3 roast potatoes. So why would we about, you know, I get that it doesn't work as simply as that. You know, you don't want a second slice of pudding or an extra starter. We don't tie ourselves up in knots, but we do on the alcohol front. And actually, some of it is about communicating that, you know, you're a brilliant host. Thank you for your generosity. But actually, if you're really wanting to make me have a good time, getting me a cup of tea is me at my happiest. Thank you.
Yeah.
So that's the reassurance you can give.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe this is something as well that you need to just practice a bit leading up to an event, and practice setting those boundaries, and just practice being you and being honest and open about what it is that you do want generally.
Yeah. And I think it makes for much cleaner communication. It can feel really challenging to do in prospect, and we can build ourselves up and then not follow through. But I think that all of us can recognize, and I certainly see this play out a lot when clients are describing something that's happened in their situation, that then if you feel like it's difficult to have that conversation, we then fall into the trap of accepting the drink or the extra something. Then we feel annoyed with ourselves. We feel like we've let ourselves down. So we feel emotional turmoil, and goodness knows what else gets thrown up for us in that situation. We can then feel real resentment to the host, and that won't be openly communicated, but it can be felt, and it may come out in another way down the line, certainly if you're spending time with someone over the festive period, which might be family. And we can end up having a bit of a row about something that you just think, we're all confused now. What was that about? But actually, you can pull the thread back to when you felt coerced into something. So we need to take ownership and not set that up. And it's when you can play it through like that, it can feel easier to have the firm conversation, clear conversation at the outset, rather than going down where we know with friends and family, because we have the privilege of knowing them, where it may take us.
Yeah.
Here I am again, in that situation where I'm eating and drinking stuff I didn't ask for, but I just want to hang out with you. Well, stick to the wanting to hang out with people and do the script beforehand.
Yes. Yeah. And that can be tough if you're actually staying with family for, you know, Christmas or New Year or whatever, you know. And I know that, I mean, for instance, for me, I really don't like eating most of what's normally served as food at Christmas. I don't eat turkey. I don't like mince pies. I don't like Christmas pudding. Actually, the things I do love at Christmas are Brussels sprouts and roast potatoes. I could quite happily sit down and have a roast potato and Brussels sprouts lunch with a bit of gravy, maybe, as long as it's not turkey gravy. But, you know, it's very difficult, isn't it? And so people find themselves coerced into this whole, almost, I'm tempted to say, charade. It's not a charade, though, on the host's point of view, but you feel it is.
Yeah. And I think that, again, different things will fit different people for different situations and scenarios. But I do think a lot of things can be managed either in advance by having the quiet conversation and remembering that typically, obviously not always, hosts are trying to be generous, bring you into their home or situation and cater to your every need. A lot of the time that may not have had a lot of genuine thought for the actual individuals around that table, because that's sometimes too much of a mental escapade to feel like you're overlooked. But actually, if you look at it, step back, sometimes it can help and go, well, actually, this person, this family member's catering for 15 people or whatever it might be. And over the course of a few days, of course, they can't remember what the I don't eat that thing or that. So again, give yourself permission to not have to please them. It's coming quite often from a good place, but be mindful of how it's going to make you feel if you give in.
Yeah.
And for what reasons are you doing it? And that can help to have the strategies to not fall into the trap, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm minded as well of how, you know, I've often worked over Christmas, or I volunteer in a shelter, homeless shelter or something like that. But if I am going to be on my own, I actually relish it because I can eat what I want. I no longer allow myself to be browbeaten into spending Christmas with other people's families. Because there's this thing at Christmas, especially particularly here in the UK, I've found, where people will not allow you to be on your own. So it's almost like a sin to be on your own at Christmas. And I find that that's the time when I actually really get to relax sometimes.
Yeah.
And so I, over the years, I have allowed myself to be invited to other people's Christmases, and I haven't really enjoyed it because it's not my Christmas. It's not my tradition. It's not what I want. You know, it's all really, you feel like a sort of a, an appendage, you know, sort of stuck on the end of somebody's Christmas tradition. Yeah. And it all comes from such a good place. I mean, it's you know, by no means does anybody want to make you feel ill at ease. However, after, you know, a few of those over the years, I am very strong now. If anybody invites me and says, oh, you must come and spend Christmas with us, I'll say, no, thank you.
Yeah.
No, I do not do other people's Christmases.
Again, ownership.
Yeah.
You are making them feel comfortable about your decision. Not that that's our job, but you're okay. You're actually doing the Christmas you like.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, and people go, oh, okay, I'm either off the hook or I've done the decent thing and you're obviously welcome, but I'm not worrying about you now because you've made me realize that you're having Christmas that you are choosing.
You're doing your own thing.
Yeah, trying to avoid leaving friends and family, in being lonely, the kind of caricature of someone being lonely at home, which obviously there are some people that it is their real life and they
absolutely
need those invites and welcome those invites, but it's not everyone. Some people love, and also people have had a lot of, you know, most people's Christmases are not the perfect picture film version of Christmas. And it, I know from, you know, working with clients, it can often be a time of very much painful memories and anxiety and something that they don't want to engage with because they've managed to get to this point in their lives and they know that keeps them safe. So actually we need to, as hosts and friends, trust that if someone's saying they are quite happy to be alone, trust that they are, that can't be right. Well, it might be in their case, quite likely, if that's what they're telling you.
Yes. I mean, I do feel that maybe it's this throwback to a Victorian Dickensian type Christmas where everybody sits around and is very jolly, tucking into, you know, a feast. And it's something that was really to be aspired to at one point. But I think things have changed. And also, people put themselves under so much pressure financially at Christmas. And so, again, you know, we need to have our boundaries around that too and not get ourselves into debt by buying, a stack of Christmas presents for people. It is okay just to say, listen, you know, I'm opting out this year or can't be doing it this year, or, you know, I won't be buying Christmas presents. I won't be sending Christmas cards. It's very expensive for a lot of people. Well, it's very expensive, period. But a lot of people just are feeling the pinch right now.
Absolutely. And I think that now more than ever this year, I'm noticing that it's something that people are doing much more actively. And doesn't really matter what anyone else thinks, actually. And for me, it's about communication and avoiding those embarrassing host sort of moments where you get sprung a gift and you've not got anything, or vice versa. So if in doubt, have the conversation beforehand and say, can we just not do an present exchange this year because I'm opting out for this year for whatever reasons. You don't have to give an explanation.
No.
They're the sorts of things that can make us feel very, again, very uncomfortable. But having the conversation in advance just manages expectations and removes that worry as the time approaches. And you're more likely to stick to it rather than doing that last minute gift buy in case.
The Christmas Eve dash around the shops. Yes, again, it's all about self-care and knowing that it's okay to do what you need to do for your own well-being. Time for another short break right now, though. We'll be back with more helpful hints from Dr. Joe Perkins right after these messages from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. the station that makes you feel good.
And you're still listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest today is psychologist Joe Perkins, Dr. Joe Perkins. We're talking about mindful drinking and setting boundaries, especially during the festive season, a time where overindulgence and stress can really impact our health. Here's Dr. Perkins again.
JJ, I'm wondering if I could just mention something, because I don't think we've touched on this, and it's something I do see a lot of my clients mentioning on the mindful drinking. Sometimes mindful drinking is absolutely about not drinking at all, either for a period of time or in certain situations. Sometimes mindful drinking at any period, but again, in the festive period, might be thinking about what nights you will drink versus what nights you won't, just in terms of pacing yourself and work.
Yeah.
And also, a conversation I have with a lot of people is not drinking at the pace that they are maybe used to drinking. So it's not complete abstinence. It's maybe going on that work do or family do and going, do you know what? I'm not driving, so I have no reason to stop at a particular number. But I also don't want to be the last person standing because I'm normally the life and soul of the party, perhaps, or because I'm the boss and I'm the one holding the card, so people need me to be in the spirit of it. Whatever reasons, it's about, again, understanding what you're trying to achieve. Is it halving what you might normally drink? Is it being able to kind of leave while you've still got your wits about you? Is it making sure that you leave by a certain time? And you know that if you're there after 10, that's when things start to go a bit wrong for you and you may be making different decisions that you wouldn't have made. So for me, I think in part of the planning, and I think it's just helpful for anyone listening to think about what is your version of mindful drinking? And if it is the sort of, if you feel you can, do moderation in mindfulness. What's the plan? Are you going to have a soft drink every other drink? Are you going to have an exit strategy at a particular time? Are you going to leave a family do at 7 o'clock in the evening rather than stay till midnight? What will help you achieve your objectives?
I think that's a really good point. And so also, you know, do you set yourself a limit, like say I'll have 3 glasses of wine if you're not driving, let's say. You know, I'll have maximum 3 and then I'll go on to soft drink.
I think that's something that I've found has been really helpful just in working with my clients. It will be really understanding where it starts to go astray or awry for you. Some people, and what are 3 glasses? So sometimes 3 glasses can be those 250 mils.
Oh yeah.
Or, you know, you had a bottle of wine, but stuck to your brief. But of course, you've gone into the dark side and find it hard to exit at that point because you're in the mood and you've lost your inhibitions and you're saying yes to that drink, which is what you wanted to avoid. So for me, it's about knowing where it might be certain drinks that can be more of a bad influence on you and you resist, you know, or find more of a struggle to resist. So again, having that understanding of what your triggers are, what's easier, if you know, to stick to, and setting yourself up very clearly with that in mind to succeed whatever your objectives are. And you may or may not need to communicate that to anyone, but a clear plan before going out helps.
Yeah, you don't really have to communicate that with anyone, do you? I mean, you can just do whatever you do and chances are nobody will notice. You know, it'll be perfectly normal. I think that's great. It's great advice. So always having a plan before you go to wherever it is that you're going to be drinking. Great. One thing that I wanted to touch on with you as well, though, is the after party regrets.
Yeah.
So how do we deal with that? Say we've gone over the top a bit. We might have the hangover. But beyond that, sometimes you just regret having said something, done something, whatever it is. A lot of us have been there, haven't we? How do you get over that?
Yeah, the anxiety. So, well, first and foremost, self-compassion. Easier said than done. But it's okay, first of all. And I think it's quite helpful to actually have something you've written in your own hand if you know this is something that you're likely to succumb to on those occasions, when you're sober, when you're feeling good and kind to yourself, and say, it's okay if things didn't go as planned last night. It's okay if you said something you regret. So you kind of set yourself a bit of a crib sheet to talk yourself through the immediate aftermath. And it's not about saying, forget it, don't worry, because often we don't listen to that and it doesn't make you feel better. Yeah. It's more about, it's okay. And then prompt yourself, how can we trust what we're telling ourselves? Sometimes we really catastrophize. And I know an experiment I will do if I'm working with someone and they're saying, I did this and I did that. And I'll go, have you verified this? Do you think you said this? Do you think you've upset that person? Or do you know? Verify. Are you catastrophizing it in your mind? And then you will deal with that slightly differently. If you have genuinely upset someone and you know you did, you have evidence, either they phoned you or you've fallen out, tough as it may be, how are you going to deal with it? You may not get them to accept your apology, but you're going to feel so much better when you know you've sent them a note or a gift of flowers or some chocolates or dropped them a card round or sent them a text, owning what you did and that you really regret it. And you are apologetic for whatever it is you know you've done. So take affirmative action and accept that they may not be immediately okay, and that's fine too. So we have to give them space. If you are catastrophizing and telling yourself you're such a terrible person, we need to challenge that. Because what are the chances actually that the person feels, if they're not saying you've upset them, there's no evidence to suggest it, let yourself recover and say, okay, I don't like feeling like this. I don't like even the prospect that I could have upset someone. So what am I going to do about my drinking? What's going to serve me moving forward? We can't change what happened. But actually, I'm blowing it up out of all proportion, but I still don't like how I think I probably appeared or may have made people feel, even if it was quite subtle, and maybe I'll never know exactly what that is. What am I going to do? So you can put affirmative action in place, not get out of the judgment. The judgment doesn't do anything except make you feel worse. So that's what I would say. Verify whether you've actually got anything to apologize for. Either way, try and make a plan of how you can do things differently next time.
Yeah. And sometimes it's not even about upsetting somebody else. Sometimes it's letting yourself down. Let's just say behaving like an idiot. And you wake up the next morning, you think, what was I doing? Yeah.
And that's the self-compassion bit. It's like, I had a quote unquote, and it's often, you know, I drank a lot last night. And I think that it's really helpful to use honest language, but without the judgment. Because sometimes we can dilute what happens and we know we're tricking ourselves and actually it doesn't sit very easily. But just saying, I drank a lot last night, more than I'd intended, and that's okay, but what could I have done differently? I didn't put myself in a safe situation, or I made decisions that weren't wise for me last night. I put myself in a situation I wanted to avoid, whatever that might be. And trying to understand from it how we can change it moving forward with compassion, as if you were talking to a friend. Yeah. And telling yourself over a certain age, it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter to you. So again, not minimizing it, diluting it, and going, why are you upset here? What were the risks? And leaning in, that helps us be more mindful moving forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it does require a certain level of self-awareness as well. It does require a little bit of work. So, you know, what I see with people often is that you will maybe regret something that you've done in when you're in your cups, as they say.
Yes.
But then, you know, you wake up the next day and you think, oh, no, what did I do? That was awful. What an idiot. And then you just move forward and you just forget about it and nothing changes. So it is a question of actually being a little bit more self-aware.
Absolutely. And I think that the awareness comes from, if you're feeling bad, sitting down with a pen and paper and going, right, is this something, first of all, it happened. Okay, now let's deal with it. Is it something I actually didn't need to deal with? And how might I do that? And call a friend, you know, remember it's only a mistake, no matter how bad, sort of quote unquote, it might feel. Am I catastrophizing? Am I blowing this up out of all proportion? So again, you're aware that you're feeling dreadful. So why are you feeling dreadful? What's going on here? And then also with compassion, what can I learn from this? What might I want to do differently beyond this instance to make sure that I don't put myself in this situation, whether it's the decision making or whether it's just feeling bad about something. And also if it is saying something to a family member that you wished you hadn't dealt with, what do you want to do with that? So I think the awareness can be built on from, I'm not feeling good, let's work with this.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's just say, as we come to the end of this chat, which has been great, thank you so much. Let's just say it's not about stopping the fun. We can still have fun.
Yes. Yeah. We can absolutely have fun. There are many ways to have fun. And sometimes it is about understanding if we've been drinking for most of our lives, that's going to take time to learn where you find that fun as well. If that feels like you're not going to enjoy any of these festive events, that's where some work can be done. Think, well, what do I enjoy?
Yeah.
And not put yourself under any unnecessary pressure, and don't be beating yourself up when we do make mistakes, we get it wrong, we don't stick to our plan. That's called being human. Look for what you are achieving and progressing and making changes on, not everything that you haven't done well. And tomorrow's another day.
Absolutely. And, and all of this advice, it's not just for this season, this life. Festive season, it's for life. Yeah.
Absolutely. Birthdays, everyday life, going out for drinks, being in social situations, do what works for you, but give yourself permission to have those boundaries, I think is really important.
Brilliant. Well, Jo, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Tell us where people can get in touch with you if they think that they want to go a little bit deeper on this with you.
So I've got my website. It's www.drjoperkins.com. I've also got an app called The Pocket Psychologist, which also is a website. So www.pocketpsychologist.com. They've got a load of sessions on there. It's only quite new, so I'm hoping it's available for access, but you can certainly get a free trial for it, so that's for sure.
Okay, great.
And it's got a section, actually, a short session on mindful drinking on there, coping with the festive pressures. And it is just kind of learning some psychological tricks and hacks to understand ourselves, again, all year round. So
fantastic. If you want
to get hold of me, that's how you do it.
Fantastic. Well, I do recommend that anybody who's suffering from a little bit of anxiety going forward, have a look and see whether this can help you. I'm sure it can. So thank you so, so much for telling us about it, and have a great festive season.
Thank you. And to you and all of your listeners, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Dr. Jo Perkins there with some great ways to avoid stress and excess this festive season. I've uploaded a couple of new tracks that will help you de-stress as well. They're on my website, thepracticalalchemist.uk, so do check them out if you need to step away from everything this season and relax. Remember to subscribe for updates from the website while you're there. And of course, if you'd like to go deeper, do head over to safehavenhealing.uk and book a time for us to talk. You can also follow me as The Practical Alchemist on Facebook and Instagram. And that just about wraps it up for today's show. My thanks to Dr. Jo Perkins, and thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. I hope you'll join me next time for more Alchemy 101. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.